Morning.
Morning.
Morning. Good morning. So this morning I'm going to talk about the Zen of walk with it. And I did a course maybe a year or two ago on the transcendentalists. Today I'm just going to focus on Walt Whitman. So Walt Whitman lived in the 19th century. He did his writing before and after the Civil War. He was deeply influenced by Eastern thought, even though he didn't know anything about Buddhism and Zen. He read the Bhagavad Gita, and Ralph Waldo Emerson schooled him in the Bhagavad Gita, which is non-dualist Indian teaching. And he had his own spiritual unfolding in Brooklyn, of all places. But we don't know what Brooklyn was like then. I'm sure Brooklyn was entirely different then. That's where he really matured and had his awakenings, in Brooklyn. So I'm going to talk about six features of Walt Whitman, which I think are all right present in Zen, right present in Zen. And first I'm going to talk about two of them, and then I'm going to come back and do brief comparisons with Zen teachers, mostly Dogen. The first is interconnectedness. The second is the extraordinariness of the ordinary. The third is self-power. The fourth is present moment engagement. The fourth is transiency. And the fifth is present moment engagement. Well, you can do any order you want, just make it so. And the sixth is communication beyond words, even though he was a poet. And both Allen Ginsberg and Gary Snyder considered to be him their poet. They said they got their inspiration in the first place from Walt Whitman, and then in the second place from Buddhist teachers. Examples first of interconnectedness, inner being, interdependence. I believe a leaf of grass is no less than the journey work of the stars. I believe that a leaf of grass is no less than the journey work of the stars. And he writes a lot about grass. His probably most famous long poem is Leaves of Grass, that was published before the Civil War. Hardly anybody read it, as this happens with lots of poets. A child said, "What is the grass?" A child said, "What is the grass?" So we see so much of Whitman, his own beginner's mind, his own childlike mind, wondering at the mystery that's all around us, wondering and enjoying the natural world. Again, I don't know what Brooklyn was like then, but he did a lot of walking. Brooklyn was his main place, and he walked all over. And not settling on a single answer, but asking, like an innocent child, And that's part of our practice, is to just ask. If we get an answer, we need to keep asking. We get another answer, we need to keep asking, so we can go really deep and open up to our still mind. Interconnectedness. To me, the converging of objects of the universe is perpetually in flow. To me, the converging objects of the universe are perpetually in flow. I am the poet of the body, and I am the poet of the soul. I'm the part of the body and I'm the part of the soul. So always our mind is bossing our body around. Always our mind is bossing our heart around. Or we're giving in to the impulses of the body and the body is bossing around. When we're really hungry, we give in to those impulses. But when we settle in through our meditative awareness, the mind descends into the heart. That's heart mind. That's heart mind. And Whitman seemed to have developed that capacity. Interconnectedness. I think I could turn and live with animals. They are so placid and self-contained. I stand to look at them long and long and long. I stand and look at them long and long and long. Animals teach us a whole bunch of just how to be. That's be alive. Concealing things through our mental gyrations. This morning, just before I walked over, in our bird bath on our back deck, not on the front deck, our deck, was a single sparrow early in the morning taking a bath. And I was supposed to be preparing my talk, but the sparrow was preparing my talk. I just watched it. It really almost went underwater in my bird bath. I don't know if you've seen birds in deep bird baths. Linda's always saying to me, Tim, go fill the bird bath up so the birds can get a full bath. So between Linda and I, we'd probably do that four times a day. You know, we're retired, we don't have much to do. Oh, but this is wonderful. We have that opportunity. Wow, we're lucky. And Ronald Reagan, who was my governor since I'm from California, was cutting down lots and lots of redwood trees. I won't even talk about that because it makes me cry. And then he's known for this famous statement. You know what it is? If you've seen one redwood tree, you've seen them all. That's what he said. If you've seen one redwood tree, you've seen them all. Well, he didn't get it. If you've seen one sparrow, you've seen them all. If you've seen one redwood tree, you really see it. You've seen them all. And you want to take care of them all. You love them all. So you don't cut them down. You just honor them and feel wonderful joy that they're in your midst, they're supporting you. So that's the first round on interconnectedness. I'll come back to that and do some comparisons. Now, the extraordinariness of the ordinary. Whitman, the smallest sprout shows there is really no depth. The smallest sprout shows there is really no depth. Another one. I open my window at night and see the far sprinkled systems. He sees the stars and planets sprinkled through the sky. Don't see them too much here. But when I lived in northern Minnesota years ago, all the time, seemed to be about only a third of the stars the world I live in, because of urban lights. I will open my window at night and see the far sprinkled systems joined together, alive. Extraordinariness of the ordinary. The sniff of green leaves and dry leaves and of the shore and dark colored sea rocks. Sensory details of the everyday. So I was getting kind of bored with our sparrows. Sparrows dominate in uptown, at least in our bird feeder. They take over everything. Finch came in. I didn't know it was a finch. I looked up in the book. They're purple, beautiful purple, about the size of a sparrow, purple on his breast. And then my beginner's mind kicked in. And I really enjoyed the finch. Wow. And I really watched the finch and the bird bat. But that helped me open back up to the sparrows and see that I had, you know, I had kind of zoned them out. We zoned out the familiar. And yet, the familiar, if we really take a deep breath and be with it, it's the wonder of the universe. It's completely unfamiliar. Each sparrow is different with each, with the black, with the white, that gray. There's a whole universe of colors in there. So the finch was my teacher. The finch came in and taught me. Well, there's teaching all around for us, isn't there? That's one of the things Whitman talks about, how there's teaching all around for us. Now I'm going to do my comparisons, starting with extraordinary ordinary. Whitman, beyond space and time, now I see it as true. When I loafed on the grass, when I lay alone in my bed, and again as I walked the beach under the paling stars of the morning. Enlightenment and daylight, such as regular activities, because we're just present with it. Just present with it. Dogen says, when you wash rice. When you cut vegetables. When you cook. Extraordinariness of just doing that, of just cutting up one piece of broccoli, and really looking at it as you cut it up. Really looking at it. And breathing with the broccoli as you cut it up. Breathing with it. So now interdependence. Interdependence in both Whitman and mostly Dogen. Here's Whitman. And I know that the hand of God is the elder hand of my own. And I know that the Spirit of God is the eldest brother of my own. Dogen. To carry yourself forward and experience myriad things is delusion. That myriad things come forth and experience themselves as a witness. Interdependence, interbeing. So then when we just feel this, the distinction that dominates our existence between me and you just falls away. And Thich Nhat Hanh calls this interbeing. I have this flashy title from my third book. I don't know if it was my idea or not, some clever person's idea. Maybe Wanda's. Wanda's probably here this morning. Enlightenment is an accident. And then practices and ancient wisdom to make you accident prone. So it's only when we just let go of trying to feel this inner being that it comes. As we try to feel, we're limited by our conscious mind. That's beyond the limitations of our conscious mind. Interconnectedness again. Whitman, I believe a leaf of grass is no less than the journey work of the stars, as I said before. And the ant is the journey work of the stars. And a grain of sand is the journey work of the stars. And the egg of the wren is the journey work of the stars. Interbeing. Dogen, to forget the self. Oh no, that's a different Dogen. Let's see, what am I going to do here? Oh, this is Dogen's Mountains and Water Sutra. I want to quote from this whenever I can. Probably my favorite Dogen. They're all my favorites, depending on my state of mind, right? Lhasa Dogen. All waters appear at the foot of the eastern mountains. All mountains ride on clouds and walk in the sky. Above all waters are mountains. Walking beyond and walking within are both done on water. All mountains walk with their toes on all waters and splash there. Interconnectedness, right? Interconnectedness. And yet, the splash, it's just a splash. And yet, it's part of this whole symphony, wonderful symphony of being. Interconnectedness. I celebrate myself and sing myself. And what I assume, you shall assume. For every atom belonging to me as good belongs to you. Dogen. Forget the self as to be intimate with all life. Thich Nhat Hanh, you are me and I am you. Isn't it clear that we inter are? That's his. Thich Nhat Hanh makes up these little words. They're cool. Isn't it clear that we inter are? He doesn't say we're not. He says we inter are. The more we are who we are, the more we feel this inter are. The last one. Do I contradict myself? Well, then I contradict myself. I'm large. I contain multitudes. Contradictions are not contradictions because beyond the limitations of this singular fixed identity in here of Tim, there's a multiplicity of experiences. There's a multiplicity of memories, a multiplicity of selves. So there's no contradiction. It's just that different ones are speaking or manifesting or being alive at different times. So the narrator doesn't have to get confused by that. We need a narrator, but the narrator can enjoy it all. The microcosm that mirrors the macrocosm, including both light and dark, up and down, Tim and Phil, computer and table. Dogen. Oh. So at the end of the book, at the end of my third book, some people skim to the end already. Everybody reads the beginning. Oh, it's about the accident of enlightenment. Make myself accident from. I want to read the end of the book. I don't want to miss all this stuff. So two people said to me, that end of the book is a real letdown. I said, well, you keep talking about enlightenment, and yet one of your last chapters is about endarkenment. Oh, so does Nay. Isn't that so? Endarkenment, enlightenment, enlightenment, endarkenment. How can you have one without the other? Real enlightenment embraces endarkenment. Goes into enlightenment, and that's where it finds enlightenment. But as soon as it's got enlightenment, it's missing the enlightenment that protects us. Dogen, to study the way is to study the self is to forget the self is to be enlightened by the 10,000 things. The third one I'm going to talk about is self-power. Whitman, and this has been quoted so many times. People, I don't know how many people have written songs about this. Not I nor anyone else can travel that road for you. You must travel it for yourself. It is not far, it is within reach. Perhaps it is everywhere on water and on land. Perhaps it is everywhere. So this is his individual exploration with his beginner's mind, with his what is the grass mind when he looks at the grass, with his what is the ocean when he looks at the ocean. And this is his experience of being in the world as a bricklayer. When he was young, he was a bricklayer. As a journalist, as a nurse during the Civil War. From the Civil War, he he wrote about his experience in the Civil War and nursing people. Mostly they were, I'm sure they were all people from the North, because the North and South was so divided, but he even wrote about his compassion for the suffering of the people of the South. Path is everywhere. Everywhere we go, we have an opportunity to just be on the path. And we're already on it. We just forgot. And then the little finch came in and reminded us, oh, right here, right here. Dogen. I keep saying the same Dogen ones over and over, but those of you who don't know Dogen, don't have to space out. Those of you who know Dogen, don't space out either. To study the way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. For Dogen, self-study is meditation. Self-study is zazen and kinhin, and walking by the leg. Self-study. Fourth one, embracing impermanence and transience. Whitman, I bequeath myself to the dirt to grow from the grass I love. If you want me again, look for me under your boot soles. I bequeath myself to the dirt to grow from the grass I love. If you want me again, look for me under your boot soles. Dogen, flowers fall even though we love them. Esau, when his child, his boy was 4 years old, I think, he died. He died. Esau, the dewdrop world is the dewdrop world. And yet, the dewdrop world is the dewdrop world. And yet. I'm 80 now. I can't sit on this cushion anymore. I can't sit on this cushion, but somebody said to me, I watched you getting on and off the platform with your cushion the other day, and I think you're a little unsteady. I said, oh, maybe I shouldn't do that anymore. Maybe that I, now that I've turned 80, I should just be in a chair and eat my talk. So that's why this morning I'm in a chair. People think I'm a little unsteady. Well, I am unsteady, but somebody has to tell me I'm unsteady because I won't remember it, you know. I'm just an 8-year-old adolescent. I used to spring up on this platform. One of my very favorite things is just springing up on it. Gate, gate, paragate, parasamgate. Gone, completely beyond. Well, not completely. Partially. The sixth one. The fifth one, present moment awareness equals total engagement with what is. When we're totally engaged with what is, there's present moment awareness. And there's a feeling of connectedness. And there's a feeling of enjoying the extraordinariness of just being here with each other. Just being here with each other. Or just being here with a wall. Present moment's awareness equals total engagement with what is. Whitman, I exist as I am. That is enough. If no other in the world to be aware of, I sit content. This is Whitman's Zaza. He's never even done one session, and that's his Zaza. I exist as I am. That is enough. That's enough. You exist as you are. It's enough. It's enough. Always trying to get something more or or something less if you're a Zen sitter, something less. Well, you don't need less or more. Just be who you are. Just be who it is. I exist as I am, not as a no. If no other in the world be aware of, I sit content. Suzuki Roshi, when you do something, burn yourself completely, like a good bonfire, leaving no trace of yourself. Total engagement. Total engagement. That doesn't, you sound, you think, oh, that's a big effort, I've got to make extra effort. No, you don't. It's not extra. You just let your mind cool down and you just open up to what it is. And if your mind doesn't want to cool, you just keep sitting, either on your cushion or by the lake or by the sparrows. You keep sitting. Keep sitting. And so there's no difference between sitting and standing in the moment. There's no difference. There's no difference. And yet they are different activities. There's no difference. Extraordinariness of the order. The last one, communication beyond the verbal. Whitman says, the masters know the earth's words and use them more than audible words. It avails not time nor place. Distance avails not. I am with you, you men and women of a generation, or ever so many generations hence, just as you feel when you look on the river and sky. So I felt. The masters know the earth's words and use them more than audible words. It avails not time nor place. Distance avails not. I am with you, you men and women of a generation, or ever so many generations hence. Just as you feel when you look on the river and sky, so I felt. So I felt. The workmanship of souls is by those inaudible words of the earth. The workmanship of souls is by those inaudible words of the earth. Dogen, the whole moon and the entire sky are reflected in one dewdrop on the grass. Communication. Look at the dewdrop. The light is just right. You see everything included in it. It's wonderful communication. Beyond the limitations of words. So we've had a mentor program here for maybe a dozen years, which I don't know, maybe not, maybe a shorter time, I don't know. And those of us who are teachers here have people we mentor. And I noticed much different than when I was a young counselor, and even I would help people one-to-one when I was here, I was younger. I noticed that if I watch people, if I just pay attention to their breathing, to the color of their skin as it changes, to their eyes, they communicate to me more than they do with their words. I like their words are helpful, but they communicate on something deeper. Something more immediate. It's pretty cool. Pretty cool. I didn't experience that when I was young counselor at all. So I'm going to almost close now with a story about my first teacher, Suzuki, Shinryu Suzuki. I don't know if I've told this story. Maybe I've never told it. But Ben and Susan may remember it. And, well, Bonnie was gone, so she probably won't remember it. This story, Suzuki said when he lived at the monastery, oh no, this is when he lived in his with his teacher. When he lived with his teacher, there was a hot bath. And the Japanese love to take hot bath at the end of the day. And it's part of their ritual, actually, doing a hot bath. When I lived at the Zen monastery, we all got to go in the hot bath at the end of the day. We all looked forward to it. we all thought a lot about it. Anyway, the hot bath. So the hot bath is a big deal in Japanese traditional culture and Zen monastic culture. I don't know if they have hot baths in the nunneries. They should. They should. He said, well, I took a bath every day on this day with my teacher. And I asked my teacher, sometimes my teacher had arthritis in his shoulders and hands. And I asked him sometime, shall I rub your back? Another day, yeah, I was like, But Suzuki noticed after about the fourth or fifth day that his teacher wasn't able to reach his back. So Suzuki just took the sponge, took the washcloth and washed his back. And the teacher said, oh, arigato gozaimasu, arigato gozaimasu, arigato gozaimasu. Because he saw that a student was really observing, really watching beyond the words, and so that he was able to communicate to his student his suffering without asking. Now, the Japanese are better than this than us, because they're a homogenous culture where everybody knows everyone else's body language. So we have to depend more on words, but still, there is a communication beyond words that we're always doing. So to end, as I said, Whitman doesn't seem to have any formal meditation experience or practice, but he walked all over. He walked scores and scores of miles, paying attention to everything and writing about everything, much like Basho did in the 19th century in Zen Japan. Basho did very little sitting either. He walked all over. He sat, he walked, he rode, he sat. But he didn't sit in long zazen. He just sat under a tree, watch a child. And all of his best haikus come from that. And Whitman also had tragedy in his life, had challenge. I don't want to wish any of you to have tragedy or challenge in your life, but it helped him. It helped him open spiritually. It can help you. It can help you. He lost of two siblings he was close to. He had to deal with his whole life of being gay, and his poems are pretty out of the closet, but he couldn't ever be out of the closet in normal conversations. And his poems, at first, you don't realize they're out of the closet. They are, which was very bold, and it must have been very hard for him. Very hard for him. But he did it. He opened up to that part of himself, and he honored it. He honored it. At a time where, you know, not too many centuries after the Salem witch trials. A challenge, but he did it. He did it. We can do it. We can do it. The Civil War, as working as a nurse, he was he took a former slave in and kept that slave with him and ministered to them. I'm not sure if this is after the war or before the war. We came very close to him, very close to him. And then the death of Lincoln. He wrote a whole poem about Lincoln and Lincoln's heroism and the freeing of the slaves. And then he wrote a poem about the death of Lincoln. He was always looking, always watching, always paying attention, always asking, what is the grass? What is this? What is this? Not in an inquisitive way, just in an open-hearted way, in an open-hearted inquiring, but not just with the head, with the whole being. It helped him go deep. So he moved beneath the woe is me mind. There's sadness in Whitman, but there's very little woe is me stuff. You know the difference just between sadness and, oh, it was me, oh, how could this happen to me? Why didn't it happen to her? You know that. So I'm going to leave you with a line. Let your soul stand cool and composed before a million universes. Let your soul stand cool and composed before a million universes. He's teaching us that right now on this July 4th weekend so that our souls can stay cool and composed before a million leaves on the trees. Even in this heat, which is only going to get worse every year. But the coolness is inside. If we take care of the coolness, maybe we can do something to obey the change of climate. Maybe we can. It's never too late. Okay, that's what I want to say this morning. And I see there's a little bit of time, so I'll be glad to turn to the people online first and see if they have, any of them have questions or comments. And then after I've done that, I will move to the room. Folks online, questions or comments from any of you? Or poem recitations, if you'd like. Did I see someone? I saw someone move, but I didn't see. Oh, yes, Wanda.
Hi.
Hi.
Can you hear me? Okay.
Yes.
This was a great talk, Tim.
Well, thank you.
And the story you ended with was one I've never heard before.
Oh, well.
When you said it was a new story. But anyway, here are my thoughts. And I took some notes because I really loved what you said. So I just wanted to relay these quickly to you and see if you might comment on them.
Okay.
You started with the Reagans. If you've seen one redwood, you've seen them all.
Yes.
Which was so... such a one-dimensional way of knowing, right?
Yes.
And then you moved on to Thich Nhat Hanh's inter-R.
Yes.
Teaching of inter-R. And then when I broke that down to inter-R is also inter-know, inter-think, inter-know, okay. Inter-feel.
Okay.
And then that so much supports, you know, Dogen's enlightened by all beings, by all life, don't you think?
Yes.
I mean, there's such an interesting trajectory there when you start with Reagan and his one-dimensional way of knowing.
Yes, and let's not talk anymore about Reagan.
Okay. Now, any comments about that?
Well, you and I were both in California when he ran for governor, and we thought, oh, this guy will never get to be governor. This clown, this Hollywood star. And what happened? What happened? Remember that?
Yes.
But he is Buddha too. He had his own fears. He was limited just as you and I are by our fears. And he was so limited that when he saw one redwood tree, he didn't really see it. He didn't really open up to it because maybe it was scary to him. You know how Woody Allen used to say he didn't like to go camping around nature because he got scared? I have the feeling Ronald Reagan too got scared in nature because he couldn't calm down. He couldn't open up. I don't know. I just made that up, but I had that feeling. I had that feeling about him, Wanda, even back then. I mean, we hurt people because we're scared. Why else would we hurt anyone? Why else would we? We're scared. Anyway, Wanda, that was beautiful. Thank you for summarizing that in such a poetic manner.
It was your poetry. I just wrote it down.
What did you say?
I said it was your poetry. I just wrote it down.
Oh, yeah. Whitman, Suzuki, you, me, the cup, the poetry of this cup. If you just look at this cup, wow, you can see it's poetry. There's this little leaf here. Oh. Poetry. All life is poetry in motion. Do you feel that? All life is poetry in motion.
You also mentioned, if I can say a little more, Tim.
Okay.
You also mentioned present moment awareness, which, you know, all this interknowing and interfeeling and being enlightened by all beings is only possible when we have present moment awareness.
That's right.
And speaking of Reagan's fear, also when we have present moment awareness, that is equally dispersed and possibly diffused as we share it with everybody else. Is that something that makes sense?
Yes, and interspersed is fine and wonderful. And we can do that without dissing the narrator. Human beings need a narrator. The research is really clear. I talked about this research in my brain science class a couple of weeks ago. We think anatman, no self. Well, no self because the self is a constellation of experiences and memories. But there needs to be a narrator tying things together. And if the narrator can open up beyond their limitations, that's when we move into it. It's a big heart mind. When I was young, I used to think, oh, well, if I just did another session, I'm going to get rid of this narrator. Good luck, honey. Anyway, would you want to get rid of the narrator? Just the narrator can open up, change his story, develop a story which is more inclusive, more loving, more happy. That's through your practice. Wanda, something more?
No, you covered it. Thank you.
Okay. Other people online.
Jane has her hand up.
Oh, Jane.
So, Tim, when you first spoke about the bird and then the redwood, my first thought was, when you've seen one redwood, you've seen one redwood. And so it seems to me it's really a both and situation where, you know, I need to see the uniqueness of that redwood, and I also need to see, and that bird, which I have the similar situation in our backyard with feeders and water for them.
That's wonderful, and we think it's a contradiction, but it's a beautiful paradox, not contradiction. It's like, the more I am who I am, the more I feel connected to you guys. The more I feel connected to you, the more I'm just enjoy being who I am. It's just this one old redwood who barely can get up on the, can't get up on the platform anymore.
I think of that also, especially in the context of racism and in hearing more and more Black and Latino and other voices speak about their reality, how we as white people often see a Black person as all Black people, and that all Black people in our community are supposed to feel the same and think the same and all that. And the reality is we never think that of white people. So when you see one Black person, you see one Black person, but then you also see all people.
Yeah, good, thank you. Okay, anybody else online? People in the room on the left side. People on my left side.
Say, hey.
Who would like to say something? Go ahead.
So, Tim, I was not in your class where you talked about the narrator, but is this idea of, we'll say, a mindful narrator, an alternative to the me that's on autopilot.
The me that's what?
That's on autopilot.
Yes. Yes, that's right. Well, you've just articulated it. Jason, you've just articulated it. Yeah. Right. Right. So much of our narration is either on autopilot or it is redundant. Yeah. Have you ever noticed the redundancy of your narrator? Jeez. Why does your narrator have to keep going on and on 32,000 times? But your narrator learns to be permeable through this practice. Permeable. But not permeable in terms of its dies, because you need it. But permeable in terms of it feels a wonderful interconnection with everyone. It's learning from people. Always learning from people. Always, always. But meditation helps us see how crazy the narrator has become. You know, a lot of people who do, especially Shikan Taza, which is meditation where we don't have an object, but we just sit and face the wall. After they've been doing it for a year or two, they come to me and they say, oh, I just want to give up. My mind is too crazy. And I said, well, you just weren't noticing how crazy your mind was before you started sitting facing that wall. Is that right? And usually they say, yes, yes. So, but that's the way the human mind is. The human mind is always checking things out, always worried about what's going to happen. And even facing the wall, we have time to just check out all our memories and make sure that more bad things don't happen. Anyway, thank you, Jason. Yes.
I just wanted to mention two things. Number one, that we are in a very privileged moment where we have so much technology. These people didn't.
Yes.
And yet they speak, you know, you said so many beautiful words about opening up to universes and opening up to, and the way, like, now that we have all of this technology that is allowing us to see galaxies being born,
yes,
in front of our very,
yes,
eyes, and they had no grasp of,
yes,
that, yet they did.
Yes. Well, you're right. You're right. The fact that I can talk to, I think there are 30-some people here online. Wow. What would have Whitman thought about that? That's pretty cool. During the pandemic, we were closed, but we weren't closed. Wow, wow. On the other hand, how many people do I see actually when they're walking by the lake, just walking by the lake, just being there? How many have headphones on? How many are checking their iPhones? How many are trying to look at their watch to see how fast their heartbeat is? They're missing. They're missing. So technology also gets in the way big time of the type of walking that Whitman did. It's just walking, just noticing the ducks, the geese, the sky, and just feeling the connection, just feeling the, embracing it because it's so alive and it's part of who we are. Thank you.
And then the second thing.
Oh, you have a second thing. Cool.
The second thing that I wanted to say is that within all of that, the key of grounding yourself within that observation is that we are lucky that we live in a place with so much diversity,
mm-hmm,
but we have to be grateful for it and express that gratefulness by sitting and observing.
That's right.
You know? And when you do that, you allow yourself to understand and observe people from different cultures,
that's
how
right,
they interact with each other. And that way you can really get to see and understand their nonverbal amongst themselves so that you can also communicate with them,
yes,
and bridge that gap.
Thank you. That's wonderful. That's wonderful. Hmm. All right. years ago in my other job, I opened a drop-in center for people with mental illness on Broadway in North Minneapolis. And the first year, I don't know, around almost no local people, and mostly Black people came. And then the second year, we started going to the coffee shops where local people would hang out and just sat and visited with them. Just sat and watched them. Just sat and kind of befriended them without trying to befriend them. And by the time I retired, our drop-in center was just full of people, and they were mostly local people. But that took a few years. That took a few years. And a lot of just watching and being present. Was there another? Yeah.
Tim, can we go back to that narrator who may or may not have a repetitive thing going on in your head and over and over again? That's not helpful. Tell me what you think of this and give any other strategies you can. But sometimes when I get caught in that over and over kind of dark place, I think this is a Suzuki thing from Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, but instead of having your horse mind in like a small pen,
yes,
having like a big field, and then that way I don't have to push away these thoughts, but I can let a whole lot,
yes,
in. So I don't know what you think about that. Or
oh, I think that's wonderful. Yes, thank you. Thank you. No, I think that's wonderful. I probably quoted that. You know, that's one of the things I probably quoted my teacher in all three of my books. And, you know, because I've got to keep my mind active so it doesn't just do redundancy over and over. I've already got my fourth book in my head. Woo! My mind is a trip. It's already doing a fourth book. Come on, mind, come back. You can do your fourth book, but come back. All of our minds do that. It's the nature of the mind to wander. You think that some advanced person, their mind doesn't wander anymore. No, but there's more enjoyment in the wandering. Much more enjoyment. And much less redundancy. Because when we're really wandering, we're not repeating. Everything's fresh. Everything's fresh. Whitman was a great wanderer. the right side of the room. Let's see. Oh, yes, time for the right side. Just 6 minutes for the right side of the room. Anybody? Yes.
So you said poetry was welcome. I would like to share just a short poem that I wrote a couple of years ago.
Sure.
So it goes like this. Everything that dies is once born. There's no such thing as a rose with no thorn. Our perception of good and evil is two sides of the same coin. No matter how many times it flips, it's still joined. Life moves like the water flows on an unpredictable journey with no clothes.
Beautiful. Now say it one more time and project. I'll be your theater teacher. I was in theater in college. Project.
Everything that dies is once born. There's no such thing as a rose with no thorn. Our perception of good and evil is two sides of the same coin. No matter how many times it flips, it's still joined. Life moves like the water flows on an unpredictable journey with no clothes.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Very beautiful, beautiful. Are you a regular writer?
I dabble.
You dabble? Oh, well, if you dabble like that, boy.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you all very much.